Welcome to Career Tools.
Looking to start your 2025 work life off right? Then come to Austin. Mark is presenting all three of our events in hiring, management, and communication, January 28th through 30th. Learn from the master and get the whole suite of manager tools, and guidance in one event, January 28th through 30th, effective hiring, management, and communication. You can sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
This is Sarah. Today's cast, Work-Life Balance, the Yellow Peanut M&M Analogy, Part 1 of 1. Folks, each and every year around the holiday season over here at Career Tools, we re-release this piece of guidance. It's meant to help those of you who struggled over the course of the last year achieve a work-life balance to put this whole conundrum into perspective so that going into 2025, we can all do so more effectively.
Welcome to Manager Tools. Work-life balance, the yellow peanut M&M story. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. How can I solve my work-family balance challenges? What can I do about managing my priorities? What do I do about my long working hours? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Mark, we get questions all the time. This comes up, just seems like almost weekly with folks, about work-family balance.
Yep.
And as we've discussed before, particularly at conferences, the common wisdom about work-family balance is wrong. People are asking the wrong question.
Yes, and we're the only people saying this, and I'm getting tired of being the person who says we're the only person saying this. I consoled myself, since we're recording this in February of 2020, that we also have been saying for years, and no one has been listening, or at least a small minority of the managerial professionals in the world have been listening. But just this week, the Wall Street Journal had an article, "Tough Interview Process is Linked to a Higher Job Acceptance Rate." Yeah, no kidding. We've had data on that for 25 years now. So this is yet another thing that we are the only people describing the problem differently and making different recommendations than most other people make. Yeah, and it's simply a problem with the phrasing of the question and where it puts us mentally. So simple cast this time, fairly short. I have been thinking about doing this cast. For those of you longtime listeners, many of you have heard this story. It's like the elevator story. The umbrella story. And I've held off because I wasn't sure how actionable it was. But finally, somebody said to me last week, I can't remember where I was. I think it was in San Diego, and said, I would love for you to have that story, because I end up sharing the story and doing it, not doing it justice. And if it were a cast, then I could just point them to the cast. And I said, I never thought about that. So we're going to share the yellow peanut M&M story. And of course, it's not just a story. It's a cautionary tale. And then we'll talk about what it means.
Okay, so let's explain what you mean by yellow peanut M&Ms.
Yeah. So again, we get asked a lot of times in the field about time management. Of course, we don't believe it is time management, but because time doesn't mean need managing. Our answer is usually walking through some basic principles that effective professionals employ to deal with the problem of the fact that time is the most precious resource of all. And we certainly have guidance about it, guys. If you don't know, if you're new, we have 20 to 30 podcasts about time and priority management, schedules, calendars, and so on. If you're struggling in your new role as a manager, for instance, or even if you're just a fairly inexperienced professional, just starting your professional life, your professional career, that feeling you have of having too much work and not enough time is normal, and don't compound it by then thinking everyone else seems okay with this, but I'm not, I must be doing something wrong. I promise you, everyone else is going through the exact same thing, and you're normal, and it's okay. And yes, there should be classes on that, and yes, it would help, but it's not going to happen, so that's why there's manager tools. And when we get talking about the time slash actually priority management and work-family balance, folks want to know how to deal with the stress that comes from this, right? I've got too much to do. I don't have enough time. And a good analogy is basically to solve the problem of fitting 10 gallons of stuff into a 5-gallon bag. That's how most people feel. But the stress we feel is a function of the relative importance we attach to the various parts of whatever's in that 10 gallons. You know, if there's one thing that's important that takes one of those 10 gallons, and the other 9 things aren't important, you don't even need to put the other 9 things in the 5-gallon bag. You could just throw any of the 4 in there and you're good, and you wouldn't feel any stress at all about what didn't get in the bag. Okay. But if everything is of equal importance, in other words, you haven't thought through your priorities and made tough choices and accepted some risk by saying, this is my number one, and the one that I then list as number 4, I'm probably going to be more comfortable with the idea that I didn't nail that one down. If you have priorities, you create visible risk, knowable risk to yourself. Whereas if you don't do the hard work of choosing priorities, there's no risk, there's no extra risk with missing any of them. The problem is you then have to do all of them equally, and you end up spinning plates and inevitably failing. In fact, I would say 60 to 70% of professionals spend their life doing that very thing, particularly so among managers. I'm not going to choose my priorities. I'm going to try to get everything done. This then creates enormous problems when you become a mid-level manager, senior manager, director, senior director, junior VP, because you think your job is to do it all. And then you wonder why your home life suffers and you become burnt out. So when we get into these conversations in the field, that's when I share the yellow peanut M&M analogy or story. And here it is. The problem with work-family balance issues, or the work-family balance problem, is the problem statement itself. Think about the idea of keeping two things in balance. That's what work-family balance is, right? If you think of a seesaw or a teeter-totter or even a set of scales, when one side goes down, the other, by definition, must go up. What this causes with us, because we're trying to solve a balance problem, what it causes for us emotionally as professionals and family members is a feeling of losing, even when we've made a choice that we think is helping us win. Every single time you choose an hour with family or an hour with work, you have concomitantly a failure of an hour at work or a failure of an hour at home. Failure accompanies every one of your successes. Every minute you spend with your family is a minute you spend away from work. Every minute spent at work, generally speaking, outside of 9 to 5, even if there might not be any family members at home, becomes a feeling of failure relative to our families for many of us in many cases. So many of us, a terribly high percentage in my estimation, end up in a constant state of failure and priority fatigue and a sense of disillusionment, disappointment. I mean, I hate to get too scary, but self-loathing about the fundamental question in apportioning our most precious resource, which is time. Okay. And again, this is all because we're asking the wrong question. We ask ourselves how to balance two things, work and family, when those two things are so unequal, so not even in the same league equal, it's almost absurd. For instance, how many times have you ever heard work first, as opposed to the common phrase everybody hears, family first, right? How many times have you heard an obituary which suggested that the one failure of the deceased was not enough time at the office, not enough time away from her family, right? The next time you start asking yourself how to solve your time management problem relative to work and family, first, as we said earlier, stop trying to manage time. Time isn't going to be managed by you or anybody else. Thank you very much. And since you can't manage time, you're smart enough to realize that then what you're really managing are priorities, right? Now you're asking yourself a question about what are my priorities between work and family? And if you need some help with that, here's a way to remember what's important. Next time you can, when you're in a place that's convenient, buy a bag of peanut M&Ms, okay? Open the bag, pour some of them out, and pick up one of the yellow ones. Now go outside and find the sun. Hold that yellow peanut M&M in one of your hands, pinch it between your thumb and forefinger, and hold it up between your face and the sun. Now, close one eye and move that M&M so that yellow sphere in your hand covers up the sun. So it appears to be the same size as the massive yellow sphere in the sky above you. In that moment, when the M&M blots out the sun, those two similar things, a spherical yellow peanut M&M, of which there are millions and more made every day, and which you can find on nearly any street corner, and the sun, the giver and maker of organic life on Earth, the source of incredible energy that powers our world in measure beyond our comprehension, those two things, the yellow peanut M&M and the sun, based on your perspective, holding it in front of your face, are now in balance. But the yellow peanut M&M is your work, and your family is the sun. Don't confuse two things being similar when you conceptualize them as work and family on a time management sheet with how important they are. And priorities are not about time. They're about importance.
So what does that mean to listeners?
Well, there are a thousand things. First of all, I would argue that the first thing you do is you start forgiving yourself for the choices you've made previously. And many of you have made great choices, but forgive yourself for the choices you've made poorly. I would say that a good plurality of managers in the world have been saying family first and acting work first. And folks, if you say X, but you do Y is your culture. Y is who you are. You know, there's a great thing. I never remember who said it, but who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear a word you're saying. And of course, who you are in that aphorism is always what you do.
Yeah. Hey, folks, take it for somebody who learned a lesson the hard way. I don't think Mark was trying to talk about me, but I'll tell you, I made some wrong choices in my life about where I spent my time, and I spent a lot of time at work. I was the guy doing email at 3 o'clock in the morning kind of stuff.
I remember.
Thinking that in the long term, it's going to make sense because I'm being successful. I'm getting tons of stock, getting tons of options, and on paper, I'm worth millions of dollars. Then company goes broke and those millions turned into $648. That's right. And then you start wondering, like, oh, yeah, I was going to have all this. I was going to be able to give to my family at the end of that time. I was going to be able to send them to the best colleges. I was going to be able to take these fantastic vacations. I was, in the future, I was going to spend time with my family. Yeah. Bad choices. Now, luckily, family turned out okay, but...
Yeah, of course they did. Yeah. Which by the way, adds to the problem, because people can get away with stealing time from their family, and then, and the family forgives and forgives and forgives. But unfortunately, close emotional, personal relationships also are a bit like laying down sedimentary rock, right? There are things that happen that you can't get back. And that's the thing about time. You can't get back any second, ever. And the second you can't get back, the longer it goes, the more you have to do to make up for it. And sooner or later, you just can't make up for it anymore. So, folks, to his credit, Mike has forgiven himself and has made changes in how he lives his life. But guys, forgive yourself. There's nothing you do about the past, a la our feedback model. But going forward, don't make the mistake of equating two things that, through a certain lens, a certain way, could be equated, work and family. And of course, if you're talking about balancing them, that literally is the definition of an equation. Don't try to balance two things that are of such different fundamental importance to you. Do not turn an ethical, qualitative choice into a simplistic, quantitative choice. Live the guidance of putting your family first by scheduling time for your family first every week of your professional life. You can't say family first and then spend the majority of your thoughts and time and energy and emotions thinking about work. So Sunday night, when you're planning your calendar, you're talking to your spouse about it. Talk to your spouse about your work calendar and its potential impact. If you're a two-career couple with children, talk about every single day who's picking up and who's not. And even if somebody else has been picking up 5 days a week, ask yourself whether or not you're the leader of the free world or you're somebody who one day a week can pick your kids up from daycare. Schedule one day at least each week. Will you guarantee your spouse or partner or children that you will be home at a specific time? And not 8 p.m., but 5 p.m., 5:30, 6 o'clock. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with one day a week. It may float, depending upon exigencies, where you have a pre-guaranteed, no-judgment hall pass for staying past a reasonable departure time. You know, it's a text at by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Sorry, sweetheart, tonight's the night. I'm gonna have to stay until 8. Now, look, on the other hand, don't be stupid and think you've had a crazy day, you want to stay late and try to make some progress on those big projects. Your ego strength late in the day will be zero, and you won't make any headway. I've got video of managers sitting at their desk between 5 and 7 o'clock. In the evening, nothing intelligent happens. And part of the reason we're doing this cast now is because Career Tools will have a special cast coming out as well this week about work-family balance and making choices. Even if you don't have children, take time to focus on your spouse one evening a week, guaranteed. It's okay if that day of the week, again, is based on work exigencies, but we found you have far more latitude to be insistent on this with your organization, a la, therefore, your boss, than most people are willing to politely insist upon. Okay? If you're going to make a stand about your spouse at work. This also doesn't mean that you can't get up early on Saturday to work. As long as you can close the book on that work the moment your household starts to stir, it's totally fine. I remember reading a quote 25 years ago that said, there are too many people who wish for immortality who get bored on lazy Sunday afternoons. The idea of boredom is anathema to professionals. So get up early. Now, if you like to sleep, great, there's no problem. Go to bed earlier. It's not hard to do. And by the way, don't utter out loud as a professional that you're not a morning person. All human beings are built to be morning people. You're just staying up too late. This also doesn't mean that you can't ask in advance for some time on a weekend. Ask your spouse for time on a weekend to accomplish some work. But it's got to be in advance, guys. It has to not be in conflict with time specific otherwise scheduled time for your spouse or partner or children. Train yourself, and it will take you a while to train yourself when you're with your family to feel your work phone vibrating and not reach into your pocket reflexively for it. I always get laughs when I'm presenting and I say, have you ever felt your phone in your pocket vibrating and you reach for it and it's not even there? Yeah, that's actually a disease. There's a name for it. It's like subconscious systematic nervous response or something. I don't know. And you've been trained. We're Pavlov's dogs now regarding our digital devices. And look, if you're alone in your kitchen preparing a meal for your family, that still is time you're with your family. Don't answer your phone. When you go on vacation, be on vacation. Don't dial into conference calls. Learn how to select and train your number two. And let them learn what it's like to be you. Your organization assumes you're doing that anyway, by the way, and frankly expects you to do it too, but nobody does it. One call in a week off, a big one, say, that the CEO is going to be on during a week off. Okay, fine. But other times on vacation, put your phone out of reach. Mike, you used to tell me stories about going down to the Outer Banks, and you would take 2 weeks of vacation in a row because you needed the 2 weeks because it took you a week to decompress and overcome that sense of always onness before. During the second week, you were at peace about everything, and that was really your vacation week.
Yeah, because I had that disease where my thigh vibrated when I reached my phone, and I wasn't smart enough at the time to do things like not work at all, right? It's just silly stuff we all do.
Yeah, I also think there's another piece of this, which is there are people who I had this occur to me when I was on a golf vacation in New Zealand recently. And I left my phone in our hotel room, and my wife and I were playing golf together. And somebody said, oh, here, I'll text it to you. And he said, you want to grab your phone? I'm like, no, my phone's in the room. And he's like, oh, I can't do that. I'm too important or busy or whatever. He actually did like a humble brag. Or maybe that was just plain bragging that, I'm so important. I can't set my phone down. I wonder how your spouse feels about that. Anyway.
Yeah. And folks, I'm not laughing at this guy. I'm laughing at myself because almost all these things I remember doing.
Done. Yeah. Guys, it's not like we knew all this stuff when we were born. We're doing Manager Tools because we're trying to keep you from making the stupid mistakes we did. And some of the stupid mistakes we made is because we didn't know what we're doing. And some of the stupid mistakes we made were because managers and executives above us didn't take the time to tell us what was going on. And they expect you to learn the hard way. And that's dumb. It's a waste of productivity. It's a waste of energy. We've said before, part of the reason the joy for us in doing Manager Tools is not just reducing your pain, but we believe if every manager was fully capable, highly knowledgeable about management, the way good engineers are or good software developers are, there would be no hunger, no famine, no disease, no pestilence in the world. Because human organizations would be so much more massively productive. There'd be so much more profitability. More money will be donated to places that need it. And companies would produce more with the same number of people that could address the problems that the world is facing. Now, look, guys, we know our bosses play a role here. But it's more of an offstage role than most of us are willing to create under the circumstances. If your boss refuses to allow you to do some of the things we're talking about here, then your boss is telling you your priorities are wrong, which you will look back on later in your career, and we promise this, Mike and I both, as a mistake in acquiescing to. Our guidance there is get a different boss and make a note in your Delta file. If you don't know what that is, go search for it at manager-tools.com. At the Map of the Universe page.
Yeah, that may be one of the most unspoken key decisions that you make as a professional. Who do you work for?
Yeah. And look, there's much more to be done here, guys. And we have tons of casts for it. And for those of you who are licensees, at the bottom of the show notes, there will be a mentioned section, as you know, and there'll be links to all the related shows to help remind you to put this back into the rotation as something you need to keep from sliding down into the abyss on. There are smaller efficiencies to be gained here, and those can add up and they're good. But guys, all the tactics in the world won't help that sense of failure that you're going to start feeling if you don't have the right big picture strategy. Sometimes we're given the gift of realizing that the right thing to do is the hard thing to do. And I can summarize this podcast in a couple of sentences. First of all, your family is the sun. When it comes to your struggle with work and family, don't search for balance. Make your family your first priority with your choices about where you spend your time, and make work your second priority. When you get the big choice right, the small choices won't sting you as often or as much. Your family is the sun.
Well said. I wonder how many new folks to manage your tools would be surprised by this. I'm curious.
Yeah. Folks, we have a long-term licensee shout out to share with you this week. Mahmoud Hanif has been with us essentially since the very beginning. If I'm not mistaken, based on our records, he came to one of our very first public conferences in Chicago in March of 2008. He's been a licensee, I think we can safely say forever, or very nearly so. Mahmoud, we're thrilled that you trust us with your professional and managerial guidance. We're thrilled to be able to serve you. And as we come up on our 15th anniversary, we hope we can do it for many more years to come. Thanks for being part of our community.
Thanks, dude.
Thanks, partner.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you all next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.